gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. I'm not getting enough sleep of free speech because I'm not getting enough sleep. Are you? Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the shekels. It won't help you get more sleep, but still, it's the right thing to do, so do it. Send the fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. This is Tuesday. We would have had our Monday show with Mark Collett, but we're having our Tuesday show with Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's great to be here. Obviously, we've got a lot to discuss. The situation in occupied Palestine has got far, far worse for the residents of Gaza. And I think it's fair to say what we're seeing now is a full-scale abuse of human rights, and the West is cheering it on. I mean, this has got to be the greatest hypocrisy of our time. You know, the very people who have prided themselves on giving the world human rights are now committing the most grotesque human rights abuses. And Western governments, who are always quick to condemn any foreign nation that, you know, takes part in what they claim are human rights abuses, are now offering to arm Israel, provide them with more military firepower so they can continue the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. And I think this, for many, has got to be what you'd call a mask off moment. This has got to be a moment where normal people will be saying to themselves, bloody hell, you know, what is going on? What is going on here? You know, we are seeing something that is truly unprecedented. And the amount of politicians, pundits, media outlets that are coming out in support of Israel and its genocidal policies, just incredible. You know, surely this has got to be a moment that wakes up, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people all over the West as to who holds, you know, true power within Western nations. And, you know, pro tip, it isn't white people.
It sure isn't. Oh, okay. So somebody sent me something. Apparently the widow of the Japanese prime minister who had been assassinated last year, the former prime minister, Prime Minister Abe, prime minister for about 9 years, his wife tweeted something that she received from a Japanese woman who's stuck in Gaza. And this account is from the 15th of October. The woman is saying that for the people in Gaza who are trying to flee, and that's just hundreds of thousands. Gaza's population is somewhere over 2 million. You know, I hear different figures for it. It's a growing population. It's a population full of kids. And so, and Prime Minister Netanyahu from Israel has suggested that everybody in the north of Gaza flee to the south of Gaza. Well, a lot of people are taking them up on it. Now, for the people who are fleeing, there's no water, there's no toilet, there's nowhere to sleep. So people just sleeping out in the open. And it's impossible to find drinking water. It's just a matter of time with no toilets before, you know, massive infections, disease spreads. There are no blankets. It's just, it is a living hell. And all the while, they're being bombed. And so this is an entire this is the conditions for, 2.1 million people. They're being bombed in the south. They're supposed to go to the south, but they're being bombed all over the place. So it's just hell. And I saw a poll from CNN of American support for Israel. And the headline was Americans, a majority of Americans support Israel. But they did break it down by age group. And while there was overwhelming support for Israel among people 65 and over, once you got to the younger generation, there wasn't. It's like 25% support for Israel. The Biden is apparently sending, aside from a couple of aircraft carriers, he's sending 2,000 Marines to the vicinity. And, you know, we're hearing rumblings that Americans are, like, this isn't even being portrayed as being dying for America the way the Iraq war was. They don't want to die for Israel. In fact, half of the Israelis don't want to die for Israel, or at least they don't want to die. You know, they don't mind killing for Israel, and they don't mind Americans dying for Israel, but they don't want to die for Israel, and they don't want to die for, especially if this winds up being more about building a third temple, which is something that, you know, a lot of Israelis don't even, they don't care about religion. A lot of them don't. So anyway, yeah, this is the type of thing that is awakening a lot of people. And I understand in Britain, you're having things like, well, you're having very large scale demonstrations against Israel. And yet the government, which they weren't going to shut down, you know, BLM demonstrations, they're going to do whatever they can to shut these demonstrations down. Aren't they threatening to deport people who voice support for Hamas?
Look, what we've got in the UK is this incredible sort of, I can only call it a mask off moment. It's a Zionist hypocrisy on an unbelievable level. So as you know, and as I know, and as we've discussed many times on this show, but we'll go over it briefly. We've talked about grooming gangs before, haven't we? We've talked about these gangs of migrants who are largely of Islamic background, who have done horrific things to white British girls all over Britain. So there's probably been over 100,000 white British girls who have been affected by these gangs. And these gangs have enjoyed widespread support from the communities from where they've come from. So this is a huge problem. And there have been calls from people like myself, lots of groups, and you know, people all over social media, etc., for the men who have been part of these, you know, sexual abuse gangs to be deported. And these calls have constantly been rebutted. They've constantly been sort of thrown back. You know, we can't deport people. It goes against their human rights. We've got to think about, you know, where they've laid their roots, their families, yada, yada, yada. You know, these people have human rights. And this even goes for illegal migrants. You know, when people come here illegally and do terrible things, commit horrendous crimes against the indigenous people of these islands, these people who are here illegally, they get treated with absolute kid gloves. You know, that's not an exaggeration. They are treated with kid gloves. They are looked after. And if they commit these crimes, their human rights are always taken into account. This is the big issue, their human rights. However, and this is the crazy thing, the British government are now saying, well, you know, we've given human rights to everyone, but if you say something, not if you rape a girl, not if you commit sexual assault, not if you groom people, not if you traffic people, not if you murder people, but if you say things that hurt the feelings of Jewish people, and if you say things or do things that look as if they are in support of Hamas, you will be deported. I mean, this is a very clear message. The feelings of Jewish people matter more than the, you know, the bodies and the integrity of white British girls.
Yeah. I mean, it's just glaring, the hypocrisy and double standards and everything. Well, what if you're somebody who was born in Britain? What if you're somebody who's got British citizenship? Are these people going to get deported?
Who knows? I mean, they're saying migrants who are here legally as well. So they're talking about people who are here and might not have citizenship yet, but they have visas. They are here legally. They've come through legal channels. And this is unprecedented, because here in the UK, deporting someone who is here illegally is incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult, to the point where it seems almost impossible to get these people out of the country. So somebody arrives here illegally, you know, they've come through, they've obviously broken the law to get here, but getting them out is this massive battle through multiple stages of the judiciary, with human rights lawyers, with huge amounts of money being raised and spent by the left to protect these people, and the government really not doing very much. And what I mean by that is the government will roll over. The government will, you know, roll over and just say, well, okay, then, fair enough. That's the score. But with this, the government, within, you know, probably in days of this conflict breaking out in Israel, they were like, we will be deporting people. I've never, ever seen a British government act so quickly to talk about deportations as I've seen now. Never. It's literally unprecedented, Patrick. But again, it tells you who these people, who our government is pandering to, who's in control of our government. But there might be another aspect to this, Patrick, and we might want to go off on a bit of a tangent at this point. I don't know whether you want to discuss this particular hypocrisy or whether you want to indulge me on my tangent.
Go ahead. Go on your tangent.
Well, it is a tangent, but I think it'll be highly relevant, and I think both you and your listeners will be interested in this. Now, the Conservative government is in a mess at the moment because the Conservative Party are behind in the opinion polls. They have been getting bruising results in recent parliamentary by-elections, and they were forced into second place at the recent round of council elections that happened earlier this year. Now, they still came second, so it wasn't a complete disaster, but they are trailing in the polls. Now, no group have come out in greater and more craven support for Israel and the Zionist cause than the Conservatives, than this Conservative government. It's like nothing you've ever seen. I mean, these guys are so on their knees and their tongues are so deeply inserted in that Zionist backside. It's nauseating. But I think a lot of this will be because they are Zionists themselves and they do support the state of Israel. But how much of this is because there's an election coming up within the next 14 months? I think some of this is a massive play to solicit the support of a powerful minority, the Jewish community, and to say to the Jewish community, hey, look, you know, we may be waning in popularity, but there is the chance here of protracted problems in the Middle East, and we're your guys. We're going to have your backs. We are 100% going to stick with you. We are 100%, you know, going to work with you. We are 100% going to support Jewish interests, Israeli interests in the Middle East. We're going to support the Zionist project. We will kowtow to your demands. Now, that's a powerful message to send to powerful people. And on the other hand, the Labour Party, despite their leader Keir Starmer being married to a Jewish lady, despite his children being ostensibly Jewish, as by Jewish law, because their mothers are Jewish, he has come out, obviously being, waving the Israeli flag. Much of the Labour Party has done the opposite. So the Labour Party as a whole have been highly supportive of the Palestinian cause. They have been highly supportive of the people of Gaza. They have been highly critical of the Israeli government. They have been anti-Zionist. And Labour councils, Labour pundits, Labour MPs, including Jeremy Corbyn, are out and out supporting the Palestinian cause. Now, I think that is going to worry a lot of powerful Jews in this country. And I think it's also going to worry powerful Jewish bodies like the British Board of Deputies, because they're going to be saying to themselves, well, who are we going to throw our weight? And it's, you know, behind the next general election.
The British Board of Deputies, is that a Jewish organization?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That is a Jewish organization. It's the most powerful Jewish organization in the UK.
And so okay. It's like, would it be the equivalent of AIPAC in the United States?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is the equivalent of AIPAC. They are by far the most powerful group. In fact, it is the equivalent of AIPAC, but in a way, I think it might be more powerful because there are other Jewish groups in the US, but really in the UK, the British Board of Deputies is the group. You know, it is the one, and I don't believe, and I might be wrong about this, somebody can correct me if I'm, I don't believe there is any competing groups or groups that would, you know, sort of vie for position of top dog. So that's, you know, having their support, any government that would have their support would be in a, you know, a strong position, a very strong, strong position. So I would say that, you know, fundamentally, this could be a play by the Conservative Party because they're thinking, you know, how can we, you know, how on earth can we, as a party, you know, come out and, you know, essentially benefit from this in some way? Now, that obviously isn't the whole story. I'm not saying this is just a political move. People like Suella Braverman, the Home Secretary, you know, she has said some good things about immigration and about...
And she's currently the Home Secretary?
She is currently the Home Secretary, but she's married to a Jew. She's married to a Jew.
Now she's Indian, but she's Hindu, I take it.
Yeah, she's married to a Jew. She's Indian, not Pakistani. She's not a Muslim. Wow. She's married to a Jew. So there is that Jewish connection there. But I wonder how much of this is Jewish connection and how much of this is also naked opportunism looking toward a general election that has to be held at the latest by January 2025 and a party that's thinking to themselves, look here, if we want even the slimmest chance of getting back into power, we must categorically get the backing of people who hold powerful positions and hold sway. And the Jewish community certainly do that in the UK. They hold huge amount of sway. And we've seen with previous British prime ministers that the night before the election, they went and had dinner, you know, with powerful individuals from the Jewish community. You know, these prime ministers, you know, they went and took the knee at companies like Goldman Sachs. And I think there is certainly something here. And this something, again, speaks to the level of power that Zionists have within the UK. And, you know, why leading political parties, politicians and people who are in power pay so much reverence to the cause of Zionism and to the state of Israel, which is obviously when you look at things on the map, when you look at, you know, GDP, when you look at sort of standing on the world stage, Israel is, you know, would be. So if you're an alien and you came down tomorrow, you would look at Israel and you would look at the history of the world and you'd say, well, this country is small. It's insignificant. It has no power. It's, you know, it's not a China. It's not a Russia. It's not a Britain. It's never had a mighty empire. It's certainly not an America. But, you know, that would be a mistake to make because we know that when you scratch beneath the surface, this tiny Middle Eastern nation holds this huge amount of power. And you can see this power now being leveraged. You can see this power being, you know, used here in the UK with devastating effect. I mean, something else that we could talk about is there's been these huge pro-Palestine protests. But the UK government are coming down hard on them. You know, you've got a Home Secretary who's literally saying to protesters, we are watching you, we are monitoring you, the police will be coming for you. Well, they never said this to BLM rioters, did they?
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. Illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is five times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Talked about is there's been these huge pro-Palestine protests, but the UK government are coming down hard on them. You know, you've got a Home Secretary who's literally saying to protesters, we are watching you, we are monitoring you, the police will be coming for you. Well, they never said this to BLM rioters, did they?
They didn't, and the contrast is stark. Now, so you mentioned the Conservative Party, and the Conservative Party has been in power since, 2011 or something? The last non-conservative prime minister was Gordon Brown, and nobody remembers him. That was a long time ago. So you've had a number of prime ministers. So you had David Cameron, and the lady that made the weird faces, and then you had Johnson, and then you had that lady.
No, it's the other way around. It was David Cameron, then it was weird face woman Theresa May, then it was Boris Johnson, then it was Liz Truss. It's Rishi Sunak, and Rishi Sunak is the only prime minister in that period who wasn't elected in any way. So Liz Truss, although she wasn't elected by the public, she was elected by members of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, okay. So you've had all these prime ministers in a row from the Conservative, and the Conservatives are way behind in the polls. And you mentioned Suella Braverman, the Indian lady who's married to a Jew, who's the Home Secretary. And I've been reading articles about how she's aiming to be at least the Conservative leader after the Conservatives lose the elections, and then Rishi Sunak would would presumably resign as leader. So you got these two Indians way up there. You've got Priti Patel. You got, I mean, so the conservatives are full, at least they're full of Indians. And I remember that when Liz Truss won that election, there was also a black lady from Jamaica who was running. So, I mean, it's the conservative party's chock full of non-whites. But is the large Muslim population, the Pakistanis and the Bangladeshis, do they typically vote for Labour? And is Labour beholden to the immigrant and in particular the Muslim community?
Well, this is interesting. Labour has historically, not always, but historically had much greater ties to the Muslim community in Britain than the Conservatives. Now, there are some Muslim areas that do vote Conservative, but they are few and far between. So it's not a black and white issue. It's not Labour has all the Muslims and Tories have, you know, all the whites or anything like that. That's not how it works. But on balance, it is the norm for migrants or migrant communities or settled migrant communities to support the Labour Party. That is far more common. Just as in America, it is far more common for, you know, migrants or settled migrant communities or ethnic minorities to support the Democrats. Now, what you are seeing here is Labour having to be very, very careful, because Labour also cannot offend or cannot, you know, annoy the Muslim communities in their heartlands. And the other thing with the Muslim communities is the Muslim communities don't just vote Labour, they become Labour. And that's a very important point to make. It's not just that, you know, a white Labour politician will turn up in a Muslim area, say the right things, and then Labour, Muslim supporting, you know, Labour supporting Muslims will then say, right, we're going to vote you into power. What has happened in many of these towns and cities where there are sizable Muslim populations is that the Muslims have become leading Labour Party activists and have taken over the party locally by joining, getting involved in community action, and basically participating in the democratic system. I mean, I'm not saying it's beneficial that they do that, but I'm not saying it's wrong either, because obviously if you live in an area, you are absolutely, you know, allowed to organize along ethnic grounds or ethnic lines and express yourself in that manner through democratic means, which is what they have done. So you are going to see probably entire blocks of Labour councillors. So the main body of Labour politicians in Parliament, they are not Islamic, but there are, you know, entire councils at city or town level where, you know, Muslims dominate those councils as sitting Labour Party councillors. So Labour has to be a lot more careful when it comes to the Islamic community than the Conservatives do.
Mm-hmm. And Sadiq Khan, who is the mayor, what do you call him? Do you call him Lord Mayor or is he just mayor of London?
No. He's the mayor of London in sense of Greater London. The Lord Mayor of London is something completely different. Let's not get into this because... Yeah, so the Lord Mayor of London is somebody, I believe, somebody who is appointed, not elected. And it is a historic role. Whereas the Mayor of London is in charge of City Hall and he is voted for by the electors of Greater London. Now, the Lord Mayor is, I believe, the Lord Mayor is just Lord Mayor of the City of London, and the City of London is different to Greater London. So this is all quite complex.
Okay, the finance.
And it's very British.
Truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is Elizabeth McCabe, a.k.a. Lucky One of Truth Frequency News. I wanted to tell you all about Extendivite from HeartDrop.com. Y'all know I check everything before I air it. When I heard about Extendivite on TFR, I went to HeartDrop.com and started my research. It's got cayenne. That's good for blood and circulation. It stimulates the blood flow. It's got garlic, which fights bacteria like antibiotics, and it lowers the cholesterol and blood pressure. It also has milk thistle, which is the best detox for liver. I couldn't wait to try it out, and I'm glad I did 4 months ago. And here's obvious results. My hands and feet don't get cold anymore. The varicose veins have faded too. My wrists don't hurt after typing all day. Now, I tell you all this because it's true and I want you to really live life. Try Extendivite. Go to heartdrop.com and order it.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Electors of Greater London. Now, the Lord Mayor is, I believe, the Lord Mayor is just Lord Mayor of the City of London. And the City of London is different to Greater London. So this is all quite complex.
Okay.
And it's very British.
Okay, so Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, is Pakistani Muslim. Is he Labour?
He absolutely is Labour.
Okay, so he's Labour. So, all right. So now, the Home Secretary Suella Braverman has threatened deportation for anybody who supports voices support for Hamas. Is this stopping people from demonstrating and burning Israeli flags and whatnot, or is she just?
Oh, absolutely not! Absolutely not. There's nothing stopping people from protesting. In fact, the protests have been, you know, huge, and they've been in the length and breadth of the country. In London at the weekend, there was, the papers said 10,000 to 15,000, but it may well have been more. I mean, they brought central London to a standstill. So it was impressive, the numbers and the vibrancy from the crowd. And these were genuinely largely peaceful protests. This wasn't a Black Lives Matter largely peaceful protest where policemen were getting beaten and shops were getting looted and things were being burned down. But despite the peaceful nature of these protests, Suella Braverman is saying, watch your backs. If you went to one of these protests, we are monitoring you. We're coming for you. We're looking into your conduct. And in France, Emmanuel Macron has gone as far as attempting to ban pro-Palestinian protests, which is incredible because
France has a huge Islamic population, and the entire outer ring of Paris, the suburbs, is just completely dominated by Muslims. And these are people who traditionally would vote for Macron rather than voting for, you know, his closest rival, which obviously at the last presidential elections was Marine Le Pen. And he's now saying to these people, oh no, you can't even go out and protest. But you got to remember, earlier this year, Macron let those people riot for, was it 2 or 3 days? Days, and he wouldn't put the riots down.
You and I had a show about it right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Massive riots. I mean, to the point where you wondered if Macron was going to have to just flee in the night. So it's really astounding. And so that's, you're saying these are people, the Muslims are people who would normally support Macron, as opposed to his nearest rival being Marine Le Pen. Marine Le Pen, she has tried to be, she's a daughter of Jean-Marie Le Pen, who was she wound up kicking him out of the party because he said that the Holocaust was a footnote in history, and so she kicked him out of the party that he had founded. Jean-Marie Le Pen, the father, by the way, threw a birthday party for David Duke back when David Duke was living in Europe. So he hosted a birthday party for David Duke. So Marine Le Pen, I don't know exactly what she's saying about this. She tries not to be anti-Semitic. What about you mentioned France, so you've got Paris, the banlieue, the suburbs, are very, very Muslim. Other places in France, Marseille or Lyon, they're full of Muslims. You got Germany, you know, Dusseldorf, and a lot of places are full of Turks and whatnot. You've got Malmo in Sweden, which is it majority Muslim? I know it's got massive no-go zones for police that are just full of Muslims. So Liège in Belgium is that majority Muslim? You got all these very, very heavily Muslim cities strewn all over Western Europe. Are they going to get shut down? I mean, what's going on the continent?
Well, France is the most France has obviously been the place which has received the most attention because Macron has come out with this draconian policy of preventing protest, which is quite incredible. But I should imagine there were also widespread protests in places like Germany, because Germany has absorbed more migrants over the last decade than I think any other European nation. I think Britain and Germany are close to one another, but I think Germany just has the edge on Britain. It is, of course, a bigger country. And I think what you're seeing here is a situation where Zionists here in the West aren't really sure what to do, because these Zionists have repeatedly used Western superpowers to fight their wars in the Middle East. They have repeatedly destabilized the Middle East. They've repeatedly carried out actions that have led to these huge streams of migrants coming to the West. And then these Zionists have stood at the gates welcoming the migrants in. But the fruits of that are not something that Zionists are happy to see or embrace, because they've opened our borders, but the result is thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people all over the Western world are now waving Palestinian flags and calling on their governments not to support the Zionist state of Israel. And I should imagine that is making lots of Zionists very uncomfortable. But the interesting thing is, it's a problem of their own making. I wonder if they're so happy right now that they replaced all those white people.
Yeah, and there were warnings in the United States 20 years ago, 22 years ago, there was a paper written by a gentleman named Steven Steinlight from, what was it? I think he was the head of the American Jewish Committee or something like that. And he was warning. He was saying, we're bringing in all these people from the third world who aren't sufficiently pro-Israel and or pro-Jewish. And if we bring them in too fast, we're asking for trouble. We've got to bring them in. We got to bring them in, but it's got to be more slowly so that they can be acclimatized, or they can be assimilated into America's pro-Zionist, pro-Jewish political culture. If we bring them in too fast, we're going to get overwhelmed. Well, they brought them in too fast, and of course, it's not even just the immigrants. If you look at campuses in the United States, so I mentioned before that CNN poll showing a very sharp divide between the older generation and the younger generation on their attitude towards Israel. Harvard, which is thoroughly Jewish run and has a Jewish student body that's probably 25% of the student body, yet in order to hold down the non-Jewish white student body, to keep non-Jewish whites out of Harvard and out of the fast lane for getting into the elite of the country, they've let in huge numbers of random non-whites. Asians get in, but lots of blacks, lots of Hispanics, lots of foreigners. And so now you've got these 31 student organizations that came out in favor of support, solidarity with Gaza. And the Jews who run Harvard are freaking out, and you've got efforts to dox the individuals who are part of these groups. But yeah, the campuses. I remember going to it wasn't a Harvard, but was it what's the name of the college? Amherst College, which is nearby. It's one of the elite colleges, and seeing these very large posters in the student commons, in the cafeteria, these huge posters just sitting there, on the walls, proclaiming solidarity with Palestine. And I'm not talking about last week. I'm talking about, say, 5 years ago. So you already had that tendency, and it's very strong. But these are the same people who get their knickers in a bunch when you say that there's only two genders. These are, the same people who love Black Lives Matter, even if people they know are getting murdered by random blacks on the streets. This thoroughly indoctrinated youth. But yet, one of the things they got indoctrinated with was Israel is a white supremacist colonizing apartheid country, and Palestinians are noble brown people who are being oppressed by these white supremacist Israelis. And so there's solidarity, and you see it on the campuses, and even part of the Democratic Party, the so-called Squad, has been pretty much alone in the American political class in voicing any kind of concern for Gaza. So there you go. These are movements of the Jewish elite's own creation, but they cobbled together some sort of coalition that has internal contradictions. So I just kick it back to you.
Well, I find this all quite amazing. And some people have actually asked me, and this is an interesting question, saying, if Zionists are so powerful, why aren't all of these young people in universities and colleges, supporting Israel? Why are they supporting Palestine? If Zionists have this incredible amount of power, why isn't everyone in lockstep behind them? And that is an interesting question, but it's one with a very, very simple answer. Zionists are so powerful that they have effectively brainwashed the next generation of university, or the vast majority of the next generation of university-educated youngsters in Western nations. But they've indoctrinated them with the idea that apartheid, ethnic solidarity between white people is a terrible thing. And what's more, that any ethnic minority group should be treated with absolute reverence, respect, put on a pedestal, given everything, and there should be no ethnic separation whatsoever between whites and non-white minorities, unless, and with the caveat, unless those non-white minorities choose that to create their own safe space. But whites can never be the ones that choose the separation. And then all these young people look at Israel and they see people that they regard as white Western folk living in the Middle East. And they see those white Western, we know they're not white Western folk. We know they're Jews, who are a separate ethnic group. But this is what these, you know, young university age, you know, students and graduates or postgraduates see. And they see an apartheid state, they see an ethnic minority being corralled in an open-air prison camp. And they say, well, you know, we smashed apartheid South Africa, we tore apart, you know, white rule in Rhodesia, and now we must do the same in Israel. And the reason these youngsters are acting in this way is because they have been told repeatedly by every one of their lecturers, many of whom will have been Jewish or influenced by Jews, that they have to always support the, in inverted commas, I'm not going to use an inverted commas word, but they've always got to support people of color in any form of ethnic conflict with whites. And they look at Israel, they pay it a cursory glance, and they say, this is a white supremacist ethno state in the Middle East, which is carrying out, you know, apartheid to a much greater degree than we saw in South Africa. It's our duty to support the Palestinians. Now, obviously, this is anti-white brainwashing backfiring on an epic level, on an epic level. But then it goes a step further, because you have to then couple that with the millions and millions of Muslims that are now living in the West, waving the Palestinian flags and raging against, again, what these, you know, young intellectuals, graduates, students see as white supremacist Western governments supporting Israel. And again, their natural instinct that they've been, well, not their natural instinct, but the instinct that they've been indoctrinated, the instincts that they've been sort of taught, or the indoctrination that they've undergone, which has, you know, skewed their instincts, causes them to immediately side with the Palestinian protesters. They are following their indoctrination. They're following what they've been told to do and what they've embraced because of the brainwashing slash education, whatever you want to call it, that they've undergone in these institutions. And really, this huge pushback against Israel and the West's support for Israel is actually almost completely down to Jewish policy. Jewish policy, which has opened our borders, Jewish policy that has brainwashed generations of young people into always taking the side of, you know, the minority against the white man, has led to an epic pushback against Israel. And it shows just how short-termist the Zionist policy of replacing whites and indoctrinating and deracinating white students is, because it's backfiring. I mean, obviously it hurts white people, but it's backfiring upon Jewish communities all over the West right now. And that is something I find, you know, quite interesting.
Yeah, and here's, I think it's an irony. So Israeli society is very divided. Now, one thing they're not divided on is wanting to ethnically cleanse Israel of Palestinians, right? I mean, that's something that they all united around. But and the underlying problem here, the underlying cause of this conflict is that Jews have been ethnically cleansing Palestinians from the land that Palestinians lived in for as far back as you want to go. And it's been going on, and it's been very successful. And you can look at maps and just see the decreasing area that Palestinians have, that they inhabit and have any kind of control over, even the most nominal control, is just shrinking and shrinking. That's the underlying problem. But the immediate provocation that set off this Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which is the name of the Hamas operation where they went over the wall and killed and kidnapped people, was
John, the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Set off this Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which is the name of the Hamas operation where they went over the wall and killed and kidnapped people, was the threat to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, because you've got these forces in the Netanyahu cabinet who are ready to tear down that mosque and build the third temple. And, you know, the irony here is that the support base for Netanyahu nowadays is not the white European the white European ethnically Ashkenazi population that looks like regular white people, but it's the swarthy Mizrahi population that has been actually in Israel. It's been marginalized, even though it's more or less half the population. And it's also the settlers who don't look like regular white people. You know, they're all always wearing Israel like Jewish garb and everything. And the people that look the whitest in Israel are the people who are out demonstrating against Netanyahu all summer long because he's trying to take control over the courts. And the courts, you know, the one thing that's blocking the Netanyahu cabinet from just having kind of dictatorial control and a control over the country that would be to the benefit of these highly religious, swarthy Middle Eastern origin Jews and the settlers who are, I guess the settlers are largely of European Ashkenazi origin, but they're religious fanatics. So there's a little bit of an irony there, but whatever. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wanted to kick it over to you for, you know, final comments. And I know you're planning something for your weekly show that is going to be talking about some of these hypocrisies.
Yeah, I've got a video that I'm scripting at the moment called Zionist Hypocrisy Exposed, and I'm very much looking forward to that going live, which will be on Friday at 1 p.m. when my videos always go live. I've got to get it checked by a legal professional first. And also, I have a special show tomorrow night with Syria Girl, and we will talking about the atrocities in Gaza. It'll be a whole show dedicated to what's going on at the moment in occupied Palestine, the Western response, the potential for a full-out war in the Middle East. I really can't wait for that. She's an absolutely lovely girl. I've really enjoyed working with her in the past. Yeah. She's very, very sweet and personable. And, you know, she's one of those people that I'm very, very proud to have on our side, who's willing to talk to us and work with us. And I will continue to be posting on social media over the next, you know, days, weeks, months, talking about these issues. Please do follow me on Gab and Telegram, where I've been exposing some of the worst hypocrisies and some of the conservative influencers who are cravenly supporting Israel despite the acts of genocide that the Israeli military is carrying out.
Wow. Well, say hello to Syrian Girl for me, and I'll look forward to that. And thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you, and I'll see you same time next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a
way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.